1.
1850-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Five one double 51 is our text number. Eimear, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
It's an unusual call and an unusual request. What's first of all your request, Eimear?
I have an issue with, I cannot drive or cycle.
Okay.
Because I have an acquired brain injury.
Okay.
And the issue I have is that I'm finding it difficult to get the council to cut the sides of the road for me because of wildlife.
Well, cutting of hedgerows is banned between the 1st of March and the last day in August.
Right, okay. And if you don't mind me saying, Joe, what road tax are the birds paying that they're entitled to my space on the road?
And so, what problem is it creating for you?
I have an acquired brain injury and I get startled very easy. So I'm walking and a car comes around the corner and I have to stand out on the road to avoid walking in on top of the trees or bushes. And when I'm standing out on the road, the car comes around the corner at whatever speed it chooses and I'm in trouble on the road then.
Is there no footpath?
Pardon me?
There's no footpath, obviously.
There's no footpath. I live out the country. I live two and a half miles outside the town here.
Okay. And the wearing of a high-vis jacket or...?
Not during the day, no.
Why not?
Because I wouldn't... I'd have a bright colour on me.
Yeah? And why... Oh, you'd be wearing a bright colour anyway.
Yeah,
okay,
I would,
sorry,
yeah.
I misunderstood you there. So you do your best to be seen anyway.
Correct, yes.
Okay, now, you being easily startled...
Yes.
...is a result of your brain injury.
Yes.
Is that correct?
It is, yeah. Okay. When I was 21...
Yeah.
I got a virus. I got stroke-like symptoms, so I lost the power on one side of my body on a Sunday evening.
Okay.
The power came back on Monday morning and I was in hospital.
Mm-hmm.
On Wednesday, a lumbar puncture was done and on Friday, my brain ruptured. I went into a coma and woke Monday with an acquired brain injury.
Which was? How did that manifest? How did the acquired brain injury manifest itself?
I'm not sure with memory loss now because the scar on my brain is going through my temporal lobe, which is my short-term memory and my fright factor.
So when you woke up, Eimear, after this, could you remember who you were and where you were and who your friends were?
No, I only had old memory.
So who could you...
I was looking for a boyfriend that I was dating in 1998.
But you weren't dating him at the time?
No, because I didn't have short-term memory. I only had old memory.
And were you dating someone else at the time?
I was. And there was a ring, an engagement ring on my finger, and I didn't know what the engagement ring was about.
And did your then-fiancé come up to see you?
Yes, at the time.
And did you know who he was?
I had to learn again who he was. And you need a memory, Joe, to fall in love. Because if you don't know where you're coming from in life, it's hard to know where you're going.
Yeah.
So I live off a daily diary now.
So no, if you'd indulge me for a minute, Eimear, sorry. But you say you had to learn who your fiancé was again.
Yes.
And how did that work out?
It didn't work out.
Okay.
A year later, I was a single lady again.
Okay. So you've no short-term memory?
Unless I think about the story or situation each day. But if you ask me if I was in where I was on Monday, I wouldn't be able to tell you. I'd have to check my diary concentrate.
Okay. And can you tell me where you were this morning?
I know where I was this morning, but again, because I have inflammation, Joe, back in my brain again now.
And there's...
So I'm waiting for treatment.
That's what I was going to say. Is there treatment available?
Well, they're going to try this treatment to see if that'll improve anything, but both memory banks have shrunk now.
And... Can you, okay, stupid questions again, indulge me. Can you follow a TV series?
No, Joe, because it's not something that I, again, would be thinking about every day. So there's a film called 50 First Dates, and my diary tells me that I watch it, and afterwards I'm crying because I can relate to what the girl in the film is going through. And if you ask me now what happened in the film, I don't know. I have to watch it again. And then in a couple of weeks again, watch it again.
So do you need daily help? Assistance.
I don't really, for a memory, because I live off my diary. So I check yesterday's diary to see what I have to do today. And I have a couple of friends and an uncle-in-law that's very good to me.
Okay.
The uncle-in-law treats me like a daughter.
Okay.
And my friends are very understanding to my condition. If they're with me somewhere and I get startled, people laugh at me because they think it's just a fright I'm getting.
Okay,
they don't realise a brain injury you cannot see.
So can you give me an example? Like, because they're in all our daily lives, surely there are many occasions, a car backfiring, even that we would get startled if we were very sensitive. The way you described. So, do you want to give me an example of how you got startled and people misunderstood?
Right. I was in the supermarket.
Yeah.
And the loudspeaker goes off in there.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And the staff member laughs at me because I jumped and let a scream with the loudspeaker going off.
Okay. And do you know anyone else in Ireland who has this condition, Eimear?
I don't, because again, you need a memory to remember who has the condition. And because my condition was Hashimoto's encephalitis, and it's a very rare condition, apparently, I don't have the memory to know somebody else
and
that's living the same life.
So who would, your consultant would be a neurologist, is it?
Yes, yeah.
And how often do you see him or her?
I don't remember. My diary, again, would tell me that. I have a GP that's very good to me, Dr. Deignan. He's a very good GP and very understanding to my condition.
And how do I ask you any questions then? Because my next question, sorry, Eimear, this is not your fault. I was going to say to you, does your doctor know of anyone else who has Hashimoto and encephalopathy?
I don't know, because I won't remember asking him that.
Okay. And you don't, if I say to you, well, did you approach the council about getting the hedgerows cut and explain to them? It's one particular stretch. You can't drive, you can't cycle. You obviously walking is preferred for all of us, but you walk, as a lot of people do, unfortunately, on unpaid, no footpaths on the road. The hedgerows obviously are growing outwards this time of year because to facilitate all the wildlife, the corridors for birds and everything else. And so do you know if you've ever raised this with the council before?
I have, according to my diary, I had an issue last year with trying to get the council to cut the sides of the road for me. Okay. Because the point they made to me was that if they cut it for me, they'd have to cut it for everybody else, that other people then would want to cut.
Well, is there any support group that might drive you in and out of the town when you need to go in and out of the town?
A taxi.
Which you'd pay for.
Correct, yes. And when you have Hashimoto's encephalitis and an acquired brain injury from it, you cannot get a full-time job or work because you need a memory to work.
And again, I'm hoping that you've read. Maybe I'll give you a few minutes. Can you flick through your diaries easily?
I can, because the diary is always nearby and close by.
But do you have it indexed? Would you know if I said to you, I don't want to ask you the name of your boyfriend, but if I asked you a question about the past, can you quickly say, hang on, give me a minute, if I asked you a question about your interest in music, do you have a section in your diary that you quickly flick through to say my favourite bands are or my favourite singer is?
Yes, No, unfortunately.
Okay.
And people would laugh at this, Joe. I know more about Big Tom and the Mainliners than I do about any
because
modern band.
They because are in, they're in your long memory. Term, your old memory,
correct.
You call it. Okay.
Yeah, I remember the 30 years ago, 20 years ago, in the back seat of the car going somewhere and Big yeah. Tom's song on. And they're the songs I remember. And my age group wouldn't understand the logic behind that, that I prefer listening to Big Tom because yeah, I know the words of the song than listening okay. to a modern song that I don't know anything about.
But Eimear, do you know that Big Tom is dead?
No.
Well, I'm sorry to tell you, he is.
Because you need a memory to remember that because it's happened since the brain injury.
But I'm telling you that I'm saying to you now, Big Tom is dead.
Yeah.
He died 18 months ago, a year, 18 months ago. Now, how long can you retain that information for?
I will forget that again in a few days because I won't be thinking of Big Tom every day.
But if I said to you, if I said we'll talk to you in an hour at 2:55 and I said to you, do you know Big Tom is dead, would you be able to hold on to that info for the hour? You would.
I would for the hour, providing...
So, Eimear, what keeps you going? That sounds like an extraordinarily debilitating acquired brain injury. Extraordinarily debilitating. What keeps you going?
There's one plus to having very little memory. You forget you're doing the same thing all the time. So again, I reiterate, going for my walk, I'm exercising my brain by looking at the sheep. Yeah. And I'm looking at the calves. That there's a big farm down the back of my house and it's new each time then looking at the calves. I don't remember that last week I was standing at that gate looking at the calves.
So you're getting...
So the plus to having very little short-term memories, you forget you're doing the same thing all the time.
So it's as if you're seeing those beautiful animals for the first time.
Correct.
But if you...
But it's also a lonely life.
Yeah.
Because everybody needs a memory to push them forward, to learn a lesson from, not to make the same mistake and also to remember, like my uncle in law would say to me, I'm always here for you, Eimear. I'll be here for you. You'll be okay. If a rap of thunder comes or lightning here tonight, I'm in trouble. Because I pick up the lightning signal. Because the nerves in my brain from getting the inflammation or relapse of the virus 3 years ago. The nerves around the scar on the brain are damaged.
Mm-hmm. And do people understand your...
No, and that's very difficult as well for me because everywhere I go, like the supermarket that day, the local supermarket, which I'm very, very stressed about because that's the supermarket in the old memory. And now I have an issue because the girl laughed at me and I got offended. I didn't know her name, so I grabbed her arm to say, don't laugh at me, it's an acquired brain injury I have. Then she realised she shouldn't have laughed. But there was an issue because I left my hand on her. I didn't do that in any malicious way. It was because the girl was offending me laughing and the experience was new to my brain. The person is laughing at me.
And how did you respond?
To get her attention, I must have caught her arm. I must have, because I don't remember it. But according to the diary, I must have caught her arm to say, come here to me, because I didn't know her name, to say, it's a brain injury, stop laughing at me. Because I'm on the footpath, again, Joe, and a car lets me cross the road. And the car beeps then to say hello, because I wave to thank the person.
Yeah, yeah.
And they beep to say hello, and I jump and let it scream and maybe trip on the footpath. And the people on the footpath then are laughing because they think it's just, it's funny that I've just maybe tripped on something or something. Like Mass, Oliver Hughes, he was a priest in Carrifin, and he became one of my closest friends after the brain injury. And I'm thinking about one sentence he said to me, and he's in heaven since. When he got leukemia, he said to me, Eimear, now I know, he said, what you've been talking about. When you have something nobody can see.
Yeah. And how do you remember him?
Because I think about him every day and I pray to him every night because I hope there's a heaven there and he's safe there.
So if you... if you think about the same thing every day, that it's like recently deleted in your photos, isn't it, on your iPhone. When you put them into that folder, the clock starts ticking, and it goes down day by day by day by day by day. You're saying if you can keep the memory of, say, a person, if you can think of that person every day, that prolongs the time that you can hold on to that person.
Correct.
But if you stop thinking about them, after a while they disappear from your memory.
Correct.
Okay.
So again, Joe, everywhere you go, everybody is talking about last week and last year and last month and how they met me the last time. And they don't understand or know, because there is no sign on my forehead to say I have an acquired brain injury and I don't remember what they're asking me. So I don't know my age, Joe, because my age changes. But I have in the old memory the year I was born, so I add up from that.
Yeah. And
so if I met a nice gentleman out tonight and he said to me, Emer, would you like to go to the cinema next week?
Yeah.
First of all, I can't go to the cinema because I get startled with the...
Unless the noise
is consistent. If the noise is consistent, it's okay. But if I was at the cinema and the film went quiet for a minute and then something loud came on it, I'd jump off the seat and scream. And that if that gentleman said to me, would you like to go for dinner next week?
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, next week, I don't know who he is because I have forgotten who the person is.
Yeah.
Your photographic memory, Joe, is better. So I remember somebody's face when I meet them on the street, to say hello to them, because I'll remember that I'd met that face before. But I won't know where or what if they stop talking to me to say hello. I won't know who they are.
So, but to follow that analogy you make, if somebody said to you, can we meet next Saturday or next Thursday or go to Gibo's or something, could you not write that down?
I do write that down, but I can't remember then.
Oh, you can't remember who you're due to meet?
Correct.
Wow, Emer. Stay there. 551551. Kevin, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
The movie's Memento and 54 State, as Emer said, but to actually hear someone describe what it means is quite shocking.
It is, yeah.
Well, what's your situation, Kevin?
I had it about 17 years ago. Now, there's a number of different types of encephalitis, but I don't think it's the same as that lady's, and I don't think I ever got it that bad.
Okay.
But 9/11 was on, and I actually believed for about 5 days that was a film. I kept looking at it, waiting for Bruce Willis.
What age were you when this happened to you?
37.
And do you know, and did other aspects of your understanding...
I showed no logic, none whatsoever. I was in a hospital in the Midlands. One particular night, I got out in the middle of the road in my underpants. I take my photographic business, going home. My family were very, very good to me, stayed with me 24 hours a day. But I actually tried to set fire to one of my sister-in-laws. Her and matches are. I was completely... And then when I did come home, I didn't know home. I didn't know where I was. That all touch eventually came back to me about 6 months. But absolutely doing ridiculous things. My wife came home from work in November.
Yeah.
I had the table and chairs out, the kitchen table and chairs out the back. And the spills of rain convinced I was going to have barbecue.
And did you know your family?
Yeah, I did eventually. Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
And how are you now with that?
I was all fine and went back to work, and work was very into me. I went back to work after about 3 or 4 years, and work, the baby sat me, to be quite honest, for 6 months. And then I got back into it, and I got back into doing your regular days and what have you.
Uh-huh.
And then I slipped and fractured my skull in two places about 10 years ago. So as a result, I kind of set all in trend again. So at times I wouldn't. But ever since, I have a constant ringing in my ear. I have a constant pins and needles in both hands and arms and my legs.
Mm.
And if I get overtired, I'll lose the use of my arm and leg.
And they say that was from an infection you got, you were saying?
Yeah, it's an infection, yeah. I have a number of scars on my brain. I've got sort of about 30 scars in my brain.
Is there a name on...
Encephalitis.
Oh, encephalitis. And whereas yeah. Emers is a particular type, God.
Sorry, they actually can't diagnose it. They could have said, in my case, they said it could have been from the herpes virus.
The
cold sore.
Yeah, the cold sore, yeah. A lot of people get cold sores. There's nothing that can be.
But I just got up and I started banging my head off the wall one Saturday.
And who? Yeah. So how do I control you when you do that, Kevin? How?
No. Sorry, just the pain in my head.
The ringing in the ears. That's tinnitus, is it?
Yeah, there's constant ringing in the ear. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, unfortunately, suffer.
And for a year, after anything I ate, would taste of sulphur.
Yeah. Okay. Kevin, do you want to ask Emer any questions? Because I...
No, I don't. I'm a long way ahead and I don't respect that lady. I'm a long way ahead of that girl. My phone is brilliant. I put everything in my phone.
And Kevin, and I strongly take your point. What led to your improvements?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay. Wasn't
I really don't know.
Medication or...
No, but... Like, they reckon there's only about 10 or 12 people in Ireland get it in a year.
Yeah.
Three or four will die. Three or four can turn out fine. Three or four. Mm. Do you know what I mean? There's a number of different circumstances.
Yeah.
But it's a word I never heard of up until September 01. It's a word I never wanted to hear of again.
My dad, September 11th happened in 2001.
And every anniversary I will look at that religiously because... I sat from Tuesday until the Friday, and on the Friday was a National Day of Mourning, and all the lads from work came to see
remember
me.
That. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the National Day of Mourning. I wondered why all the lads were off work. Mm-hmm. And my wife says, "Sure, Joe, it's a case of that happened." Yeah. I said, "I looked at that for 4 days. So I was filming."
Yeah. Okay.
But you're completely and utterly. You're not the same person. You completely change.
And Emer uses a diary. Emer, how often do you fill in your diary? Much time per duration per day?
Every day, Joe. Every evening. If I filled it in at 6 o'clock in the evening, as I do most days,
okay.
I'd have to top it up again at 9 o'clock to say what happened between 6 and 9, and I'd have to check my phone to see what phone calls, who had I been talking to, so I'd know tomorrow.
Well, now that you mentioned the phone, is modern technology helpful, like iPads and
brilliant.
Smartphones?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
It is for me, yes.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
In what way? Kevin Force, and then I'll ask.
Sorry, I would find a simple thing, Sky Plus, if you're looking at a program, and my concentration would be there, so I'll pause it, or I'll pause it, or else I'll record it.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean? But I would rest every evening. An hour or two.
And Emer, how many volumes of your diaries have you got now? How many books? I don't know, you keep them in a full cupboard.
I have since 2004.
Yeah.
So 15, I have 15 years of it.
And is it one diary per year?
One diary per year.
So what, it's an A4 size diary with a page a day type of thing?
I only know this year's diary is A4.
Yeah,
I don't know what the other diaries are like because I don't remember.
But where are they?
They're hidden in my household. And my one person that I trust knows where they are.
And why do you hide them?
I hide them because I never want anybody to read my life story. The diary cannot tell a lie. So I need to write every day where I was, who I spoke to, who said something to me, who didn't. And I don't want anybody to read how I felt about whether the person was ignorant to me, rude to me, upset me, or nice to me.
Okay. So, it's astonishing glimpse of the condition. Emer, stay with us, and Kevin, stay with us. 51551 is our text number. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Emer, Can you remember taste? Is your
Pardon me?
Can you remember taste?
Taste?
Yeah, food. Like, can you remember what your what food you like?
I can, yes. But the issue I have there again, Joe, is that I'm buying the same products all the time because I'm forgetting that I should try something else.
Yeah, okay. So when you eat something, it's for the first time?
It's routine.
Routine,
so I buy, when I go shopping, Joe, I have my list and I buy the same product once a week. But I'm forgetting that I shouldn't be always eating the same products.
Okay. So if you taste smoked salmon today, would you know you've tasted it before and you like it?
I wouldn't know that from the old memory or because it's in the routine.
And can you go on vacation? Can you go on holidays, Eimear? Can you...
I don't recall, but apparently when I did fly before, there was difficulty because I'm picking up the gravity or something. So I basically, Joe, I was roaring on the plane.
You were sorry?
I was roaring from fright. I'm picking up the gravity feeling. Like, Joe, when I'm sitting in my house here, if there's a dark cloud passing over, my head cramps from the dark cloud, like I sense lightning, and the gravity when the plane went into air. So I don't get to go on any holidays. And secondly, Joe, you need somebody to bring you that'll understand you and be patient with you.
And Eimear, I know you contacted about the hedgerows, but and you contacted us yesterday and we rang you back. How do you understand my line of questioning? Do you think my questions are prurient or... Do you follow me? I'm a bit stumped in that I don't want to... You have a condition, you have an acquired brain injury, which is awful. There's no two ways about it. But it's a very unusual one, as you say. It sounds like... I know Kevin had a variation of encephalitis, but it sounds like you might be unique in Ireland in terms of the loss over a long period of your short-term memory. But do you find... are these the questions that people ask you when you meet them and you tell them your condition?
Because I forget that I'm telling the person the same story again.
Yeah, okay. And this has been...
So each person asks me how I manage or cope with life, and that's all I can be talking about because I cannot ask them about Donald Trump or something. I don't know anything about him, only what he looks like. And I read this morning something about him coming to Ireland.
Oh, he's leaving Ireland, I think, as we speak.
Right. And if in 2 days' time, I won't know that. So I'm sitting...
Do you know who the Taoiseach is?
No.
Do you know who the President of Ireland is?
No. And that's why it's embarrassing. When I'm sitting with people, unless it's my close friends or Michael, my uncle-in-law, I'm sitting... And they're having a conversation there about something, and I don't know what they're talking about. So I can only be joking with everything because I don't know anything about the facts of any matter, only my own situation. And people don't understand or see that. Only my few close friends and my uncle-in-law.
Okay, but if in conversation, if someone said, oh, Michael D. Higgins, he was brilliant on the telly yesterday or whatever, making a speech, would you know who I'm talking about?
I photographically know his face, yes. Okay. But if you ask me what his job title is, I don't know. Because photographically, I remember what his face looks like.
And you mentioned, again, you when you contacted us yesterday, you volunteered this information, I hasten to add to listeners, of your brain condition. And the next question, I won't ask the next question because I'm... Will you write in your diary about this conversation?
I will, yes.
Okay.
I will.
And do you know that...
Sorry, Joe.
Yeah, Kevin, help me. Yes, thank you, Kevin.
There's a brilliant film, My Broken Brain.
Yeah.
It's about a lady, actually, who got in Gavlai's also. And it's worth watching. Really, and Wakenings. There's a film years ago.
Yeah, Wakenings, yeah. What was the first? Is it a movie or a documentary you're talking about, Kevin?
Both are movies. Awakening basically was about encephalitis. Years ago, 40 years ago, you would be probably putting aside.
And what about that movie, the Christopher Nolan movie, Memento?
Where
he takes Polaroids to try and remember where he was.
But I have a 2-hour shopping, right?
Yeah.
And I do it on a particular day.
Okay.
Right? When I get home, as I unload the shopping, I write down what I need for next week.
Okay. So that's the only...
But Emer is correct. Routine is brilliant.
Okay.
Now, I would not... I would have had a good support in the family and the friends and my wife, obviously, who would... If I wasn't interested in something, that's it. Good luck. It could be the most important thing in the world. But if I was interested in something, I'd get dug deep into it. Probably more so than anyone. Do you know what I mean? I would go to the ends of the earth to find something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'll take guidance from listeners on Antique. Take guidance from you, Kevin, and Emer, on what questions are valid. Roisin Nivelle is on ACL. Roisin, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you, Joe?
Good, thanks. You had viral encephalitis. And how did that affect you, Roisin?
Well, I'm actually one of the lucky ones because I have only mild effects from it. But in the beginning, I had a flu, and I was supposed to go back to work. And the day I was supposed to go back to work, I had no interest in getting out of the bed. My husband went away working for the day, and when he came back, I was still there. He had left tea. I hadn't drunk it. He brought me in tea again, and he came back and checked in, and I hadn't drunk it again an hour later. So it was just, he noticed that I was kind of gone funny, you know. So he said, I'm ringing the doctor. He said, this is not right. And luckily, my GP came up to the house, and he tested, I think, for a stroke, you know. He wasn't sure what it was, but he said he was going to send me to the hospital. So Michael brought me up himself, and they thought it might have been a stroke as well. But even though I didn't have any weakness on either side, but I wasn't able to talk at that stage. You know, I wasn't able to answer questions. I didn't really know what they were asking. Well, I knew what they were asking me, but they were asking me what day of the week it was and what date it was. And sure, I thought nobody knows what date it is anyway. You know, don't be annoying me. Yeah. So, it was kind of strange. By the time I got to the hospital, though, I was really probably not even able to stand, you know. And they did a lot of scans. They did CAT scans, and I think they did an MRI and so on. So anyways, they decided it was viral encephalitis. And they said a lot of these viral encephalitis are caused by the cold sore virus that somehow makes its way into the brain.
It's
an inflammation of the brain.
And you say in your call here, Roisin, strange odour.
Yes, that was the one thing that was really upsetting in the hospital. It was just a constant odour and a very unusual odour. I couldn't describe it. It's impossible to describe. But it was very strong, and I wasn't able to eat because everything smelled of this odour. And even people, when they'd walk past, I get a waft of this odour coming off them. It was really strange. Obviously, something in the brain, you know.
And can you describe the smell? What was similar to?
I can't. I can't. And even yet, I get it occasionally, but not as strong.
But Kevin, did you say sulfur?
Everything I tasted for about a year, nearly a year to a day, I tasted the sulfur. I could have eaten a bag of coal or a bag of chips, or it all just tasted again.
And is sulfur, sulfur, is that rotten egg smell?
Yeah.
Yeah, God.
Now, someone subsequently said to me, if you have a bleed in the brain, that can happen. So I don't know what. But exactly what that lady said, they thought I was having a stroke. You know, nothing mattered. And I had 5 lumbar punctures, which I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
Correct.
And that's how I diagnosed. They took fluid from my spinal fluid.
Okay.
Mine was over the bank holiday weekend, so it was Monday before I could get my lumbar puncture. But by the time they did it, I think the virus itself had gone. You know, they put me straight onto antiviral medication, so I must have responded quite well to that. You know.
But Roisin, if you have this odour.
Well, I don't have it now. So
I know. I know. Sorry, I know that. I know. But your appetite at the time. How did you manage to eat food?
Oh, I didn't really eat much of anything for the 2 weeks I was in hospital. You know, I just couldn't. Nothing appealed to me.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was about 10 stone, and I went to 7.
Yeah.
Eimear, I'll ask Eimear separate questions after this break. Thanks indeed. Kevin, Roisin Deval and Eimear same with us. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Eimear, just on the initial your initial request, which is hedgerows, Derek Mooney, we've asked Derek Mooney from Mooney Goes Wild about the legislation. He's up to speed on it. Derek, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you getting on?
Good, thanks. And Derek, I don't know whether you heard Eimear's situation. She cannot drive, she cannot cycle. She needs to get into a nearby town, which is a couple of miles away, and it's obviously a road without a pavement. The hedgerows, as you know, the Wildlife Act from March to August, you can't have the local
That's
authorities.
That's correct, yeah.
And this causes her to walk further out on the road, and then she gets startled very easily because of an acquired brain injury, and she ends up jumping into the hedge and just causes... And she wants to know, can the council... But they can't, can they, Derek?
They can, yeah.
Oh, they can, why?
Under so the council can under certain circumstances. So, as you rightly said... From the 1st of March to the 31st of August, mm-hmm. subject to certain exceptions. That's what the law says.
Okay.
It's an offence to cut, grub, burn, or otherwise destroy hedgerows on uncultivated land. But a public body, a local authority, a county council, can seek a licence or can go and cut under the on the grounds of public health and safety, which this would be if a hedgerow was kind of... over a footpath and you can't get by and you're forced to walk out onto the road, that would strike me as a very good reason to cut back a hedgerow. Now, I wouldn't be encouraging people to go cutting hedgerows in their back gardens willy-nilly, needless to say, during that period, because there's a very good reason for them. But in the case of Eimear there, I mean, it's obvious the council should come out and do something about that. I mean, what kind of person would you have to be not to see that that could be an issue? I mean, the footpath is there for pedestrians to use to be allowed to walk on.
In Eimear's case, there is no footpath. Do you follow me?
Well, you know, I've often wondered about that in Ireland, Joe. You drive around Ireland, there's many roads where there are no footpaths, and you do wonder. I mean, it's crazy. How are pedestrians supposed to get around? You know what I mean? It is ludicrous.
But you're saying the council can...
They can, yeah.
But who do they apply to?
To my knowledge.
Yeah, who do they apply to?
Well, the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
Parks and Wildfire. Okay, Wildfire,
it would seem fairly straightforward. I mean, they can get the minister to approve it, the minister for the environment or something like that, but I don't think it's that complicated.
Okay.
Do you mind me cutting in there for a moment?
Eimear, yeah.
If you don't mind, with my acquired brain injury, how come it's my job to make these phone calls to the council or to try to get the council to cut the sides of the road? Is that not their responsibility? If you drive out my road here, I saw them a half an hour ago, there's potholes and the trees are growing out on the a yard or two out onto the road. The road is the driver's space or my space, not the birds.
Well, what can I say to that? I can't speak for the council, Eimear, obviously.
I understand
But I would imagine that they should be doing their job, and they should. Most councils have environmental officers, and they would have engineers and the roads department that should be going out checking the roads.
Correct. It infuriates me. Everyone is paying road tax.
Yeah.
But Eimear, would you...
Same problem for litter, Eimear, you know? There's litter all over the place, and you wonder who's responsible for it. The council? The people for dropping it in the first place? Do we have to tell them where every litter black spot is in the country before they go out and actually do something about it?
Okay.
Yes.
Eimear, would it help if we contacted the council for you? Would you give us that permission, or... Now that Derek...
I don't mind, Joe, but again, I'm tired phoning people and trying to keep a diary and trying to keep a memory, and it infuriates me. I broke my leg when I was in hospital, and I need exercise for my leg as well.
How'd you break
your leg? To have my walk every day.
How'd you break your leg in a hospital?
In hospital. I was up on the first floor with my acquired brain injury, and I opened up the window of the first floor and jumped out in the middle of the night. And somebody found me outside.
And you know what?
And I was brought to A&E according to my diary. And I have one leg now shorter than the other.
And do you know?
From breaking it in three places.
And do you know why you jumped out the window?
Apparently, I was hallucinating.
You were trying to escape, or...
No,
you're hallucinating, which Kevin spoke about as well, actually. That he ended up out of the hospital in the middle of the roads looking for... I don't know if Kevin knew what he was looking for.
And again, Joe, I go back to the point. It's not my job to have to be phoning the council TDs getting on. I made more, according to my diary, I made about 10 phone calls this week.
Okay.
And today, if I go for a walk again, the trees are still out on the road on me, and I get startled with the car coming fast. I'll stand in the verge and maybe trip on a stone or fall in a drain, and the passerby then beeps at me, thanking me for pulling in on the verge, and I'm startled by the beep of the car.
Okay.
Joe, I can just confirm for you, Amber Hemer. Yeah. I'm just checking the law here. It says, and I'll just read it to you so there's no misunderstanding of this. Is that okay?
Yes.
It says, Section 40 of the Wildlife Act 1976, as amended by Section 46 of the 2000 Act, provides protection for hedgerows by providing that it shall be an offence for a person to cut, grub, burn, or otherwise destroy hedgerows on all uncultivated land during the nesting season from the 1st of March to 31st of August, subject to certain exceptions. It is important that where possible, necessary work to hedgerows is carried out outside of this period. Now, this is the important bit for you and for Emer and people listening.
Yeah.
It is possible, in most cases, to schedule and carry out necessary work to hedgerows outside this period. The legislation makes provision for works other than road or other construction works to be carried out for reasons of public health and safety under the authority of any minister or a body established by statute that led to the destruction of vegetation. So that would lead me to believe that, yes, the councils can actually go and cut those hedges.
Okay. Now, Emer, would you know, when you hear Derek Mooney's voice there, would you know Derek Mooney?
No. No, I'm sorry. I don't know who Derek Mooney is.
Okay.
Well, I often have to check the mirror myself in the morning, Joe.
I'm sorry, Derek. I'm sure you're a gentleman, but unfortunately,
not at all.
I'm
not
sorry.
And Emer, just let's do you know who I am?
I know your name.
Okay.
It must be from the old memory, from somehow.
Yeah. Okay.
But I don't know anything about RT1 or anything about anybody.
Okay, but you knew to contact us.
Because I was Googling. That's where this modern technology
is brilliant. Okay,
from my brain.
And it said, okay. Now, Derek, Kevin is on the line as well. And now, Derek, I know you spoke about this publicly, and indeed you dealt with it when you used to have your afternoon programme about, because Kevin mentioned it, he was also on the line, he had a form of encephalitis. He spoke about his tinnitus, but you've spoken publicly about your, I know a lot of people don't reveal, they don't like reveal, but you've spoken about your tinnitus before, haven't you, Derek?
I have. I've had it for nearly 20 years now. And to me, it's not such a big issue as it would be for somebody who gets it initially, because I've just learned to deal with it. They say about tinnitus, you've got to make it your friend. I'm not sure if it's my friend, but it's an enemy you can kind of live with. But for sure, there are days when it would absolutely drive you around the bend if you get stressed. The level of noise that is in your head, and nobody can quite pinpoint, I've been to all sorts of experts in this country and others who aren't able to really tell me what it is. Some people believe that it's the brain just not managing to focus in on all the signals, like you're changing the old radio, you're turning the dial from left to right and you're kind of honing in on various stations as you go. But in the meantime, you've got this, all this kind of white noise, we would call it, when the radio is trying to tune in properly. And they say that could be that, or it could be whatever. I don't know. But I've had it for 20 years now, and I just put up with it, Joe. It's really when people talk to me about it is when I think about it, or when I get stressed, then I can really hear it very loudly. But I certainly don't have any issue talking about it, because it's really important. I know that people have, or believe they have taken their own lives because they couldn't deal with the noise that's in their head, because it can affect people differently. And I could have one noise. I mean, my noise at the moment is, others can be much more higher pitched than
higher
that.
Frequency,
as I said, when I get stressed, it gets higher. And it is very difficult to deal with at times, I have to admit, but you just get on with it. What can you do?
Okay. Kevin, have you still got that ringing in your ears you spoke about, which is one symptom of your...
Yeah, okay. Constant.
And what does that sound like? Is it a high frequency noise or is it Derek's noise?
It's like a tuning fork.
Oh, God.
And
how have you managed? Well, I don't know. Have you managed to cope with it?
You just kind of go on.
But surely when you got a force, you had...
When I got a encephalitis first, for about 3 months, I would sleep for about 15 minutes per day. That's all.
Why? Because of the noise in your ear?
No, because I was so hyper.
Yeah.
So I just go.
And how do you go to sleep with a noise in your ear?
Great difficulty. To be quite honest with you, Joe, I listen to Live Line at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that would put you to sleep. But no, that's not.
Well,
sorry,
the repeat, because I'd still be awake at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, and sorry, I was being overly facetious.
Yeah.
Because you need a sound in your ear.
Because
the worst time,
if you're lying in bed,
you have
to think about it.
Yeah.
But I have a constant headache. Constantly.
Constant
pins and needles down my arms and into my hands and same in my feet and legs.
Yeah.
Joe, can I just make this other point there as well about a side effect of my Hashimoto's encephalitis? I get this aura, which is smell, and the smell is a complex seizure in my brain. So I could be sitting here watching television and I can feel that the smell is starting, and that's a complex seizure starting in my brain, which means I have to talk to myself till I get help on the phone, or if I'm out in the local shop or on the road, I have to have my phone with me all the time to phone my uncle or Michael or one of my good friends to stay on the phone, and I'll say to them the smell and they'll understand what's happening.
Okay.
My speech changes and I don't know where I am for a couple of minutes because the smell is coming from my brain and it's the seizure in my brain. And the person then on the phone says to me, and I can hear it slowly, that I'm going to be okay because they're telling me I'm going to be okay.
Well, can you smell burning?
I can't describe the smell, but the smell is from my brain.
But would you, if there was something burning in your kitchen, would you know what?
Yes,
and you got this.
I have no issue with the smell.
Oh, okay, good.
No, it's just that when the smell comes on, it's telling me there's a seizure, a complex seizure happening in my brain to get help.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Joe, there's so little. It's only recently, but 50 years ago, if you got encephalitis, you would be committed to an institution.
Would you?
Yes, correct.
Why, Kevin?
Because you weren't who you were. You just absolutely did crazy things.
You were odd, is it? You were, yeah.
I know. Yeah.
People say he or she was odd.
No, not odd. But I did in the hospital for 30 odd days was beyond. A priest came in to me. I went to about hit my box.
You hit the priest.
I went about hitting him in the box.
And I'm sorry, did you actually hit a priest?
I went about hitting him. Yeah.
Oh, you went about hitting him. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why do you know why?
I don't know. Everyone was against me. Everyone.
Okay.
I used to have the drip on my arm, the Cyclovir. I pulled that out of my arm 30 times. Just ripped it out of my arm. There'd be no logic, none whatsoever. You just...
And Kevin, you, just to try and... in a hopeful way. But you say you're a lot better than you were.
Oh, yeah.
This is where the hope is.
Yeah, no.
And,
no,
and does the word enjoying life, does that...
Excuse me?
Do you enjoy life? Do you follow me?
As much as you can.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
it's hard with all... Yeah.
If you have a support, yes, or is not. Other times, there's no, I won't say you get depressed, you get down because you're coming home in the evening. To look at me, I look better now than I did 10 years ago because I put on a bit of weight and I'm healthy in myself and whatever. For people to look at you, say, why aren't you working?
Yeah.
That's hard, do you know what I mean? And I loved work, I was in a 30 odd year. Loved it.
Yeah.
My eyes closed. But concentration, my concentration would be bridge. If I wasn't interested, bridge.
Okay.
But nothing as bad as a film. These films that start and in the 2000s or whatever, the film starts and then they're jumping back to when he was a child in 1970. I just have to walk away. Just goodbye. I can't follow that. I can't.
Okay.
If you understand what I'm trying to say.
Emer, I asked the question of Kevin, What do you enjoy in life, Emer?
To be honest, I enjoy a friendship with an older person, Joe, because they're more mature understanding.
Is this your uncle or your uncle-in-law? Maybe the uncle-in-law, or a priest that's also a close friend,
80-something years of age.
Okay.
Because he's been through more life. They understand life better. I have no friends my own age because, again, they'd have to babysit me or mind me, and I don't understand what these bands or music or type of handbag or whatever the case may be.
And have you hobbies?
Have
you interests and hobbies?
I don't, because my world is reading my diary and see where I'm going in life.
And do you read books?
See where I've come from.
Would you read books? History or novels?
No, because if I read today, if I don't read the book tomorrow, I've forgotten what I read days ago of it.
So you'd nearly have to read a book in one sitting.
Correct.
Yeah.
So that's where if I read... last night, Joe, I read my diary to see what happened to me in the last week. And I was upset reading the stories because they were new again and I didn't realise that they'd happened. Now the inflammation is back in my brain again. So again, my memory is very poor and it's very difficult to stay living off a diary like that. And I go back to the point that it's lonely like that. Because if you're on a journey, Joe, if you don't know where you're coming from, it's difficult to know where you're going. And again, nobody understands that. And I need my walk. This is why it's very important.
I think already one of the crew upstairs, there's only three of them, but one of them is going to be ringing your local council to see can they either listen in or can they do something about that hedgerow for you? Because as Derek Mooney has pointed out, there is exceptions, rightly so when you think about it.
They say, I did contact them and they did say that they'd come out to look at the situation or whatever.
But it's now, the rule comes in from March to September. It's now the middle of June and it's the time a lot of people, thankfully, are out walking again. So it's now, it should be dealt with, isn't it?
Correct. And it shouldn't have to be my job to go phoning them. Whoever brought in that legislation or law is ridiculous.
Okay, let me bring, say what his name is. Gerry O'Mahony is there and Bernie is there. Gerry, what's your situation?
Hi, Joe. I suffer from encephalitis as well.
Yeah.
I think about 3 years ago, it was on a Good Friday. And I wasn't feeling well all that week. I was just feeling a bit off form. It wasn't, nothing too bad. But in the middle of the night, I just sat up on the side of the bed. And my wife, who happens to be a nurse, she said, "What's wrong with you?" And I just wasn't able to communicate with her, So she said, "Get dressed straight away, into the car, drove me into Waterford Hospital." And when I got to the hospital, I just didn't know anybody. I knew the nurse that was there, a young nurse. I was talking to her, and I didn't know what the fuss was about.
Yeah.
Then I was brought into the casualty, and then I was getting a bit awkward inside because my wife was standing in front of me. Mm-hmm. I didn't recognise her. I was looking for my wife. Then the nurses came over and then I was getting a bit awkward and some of the attendants were telling me to calm down.
Yeah.
I thought they were fighting with each other. I was telling them to calm down. And there was a doctor passed who knew me and she said, "This man isn't normally like this." She knew me quite well. So I woke up 3 weeks later with encephalitis. I was over the worst apparently at that stage, but
and the long term effects.
Long term effect. My memory can be short term memory is bad. I have to write things down like the other people said there. I have a pacemaker. I suffer from atrial fibrillation. I think that might have been a side effect of that. They're not sure, really. They don't know how.
How is your memory? How is it?
That memory is poor. It can't be. I'll give you an incident. About a half an hour ago, we got a grant off the council for we do a big boxing event here in Dungarvan. I phoned up just to draw it down, and I'd never sent back in the acceptance form, which was to go back in December. Within 2 weeks, and I'm thinking, geez, how will I tell all the lads? I never applied for that. I never confirmed it. And I was full sure. Once I read that, I thought I had it done. I was full sure I had sent that in. Now, lucky enough, the lady I was talking to, she knew circumstances and was okay. But things like that, I could tell you that I had something done. I wouldn't have done it at all. I just, as far as I'm concerned, it's done. And I said, future events, I just can't grasp the future at all. If you said we're going to holidays next week, that would mean nothing to me because it's so far away or whatever. I can live for the now, And I'm back working. I'm back working 3 days a week. I'm lucky enough. Work for the council. I'm lucky enough the job I have. But you say
at the end of your text here, it's the queerest thing ever.
Oh yeah, it's unbelievable. The horrors I went through in that 3 weeks. Now, I don't know if it was the effect of the drugs or whether it was my brain, but I came out of it, we'll say, kind of traumatised. The things I saw that I imagined, people being killed, people being this, people being that. And then we were all inside the pub drinking and all this sort of stuff. I don't know, was it, when I came out of it, for weeks and weeks afterwards, I didn't know what was real and what wasn't real. There was people I thought were in the hospital doing stuff, you know, working at the hospital. They weren't there at all. But I was full, and I'd meet them on the streets after, and I'm thinking, geez, I better say nothing. So in the end, I wouldn't say anything to anybody I met after, because I didn't know what was true, or what wasn't true, what was fact, what wasn't fact. That went on for a long time, for maybe 2 months afterwards, you know. I just didn't know what was fact. If I met you on the street, I'd be afraid to say, how's your mother, how's your father, because they could be dead.
And you wouldn't remember.
Like that, you know. It is a very, very funny sensation. I must say the doctors were absolutely, being a bank holiday weekend, some of them came in off work and all, they came in and they couldn't shift me to Dublin. I wasn't well enough. I had 3 cardiac arrests while I was in there. And they got in touch with the hospitals in Dublin. They were getting information down. But they went above and beyond now, I felt. Or my wife felt. I was unaware of all this. But they were really, really good to me. And I can't stress that enough. You hear people knocking the health system. But I thought they were very, very understanding, because I was awkward enough, I'd say. I don't know, but I'd imagine I was. And they were very good to me, and they got me beyond. When I was leaving the hospital, the doctor said to me, I'll never forget this case, he said, because my family were called in one night, they said I'd be dead in the morning. They said, you know, get things ready, he won't be here in the morning. I was that bad. I came around that. I'm totally unaware of all this, you know. They had the hard part of it all, sitting with me for 3 weeks while I was in the coma, and the prognosis wasn't good. But it's just amazing how something can change with the flick of a switch, you know. You can be okay, next minute you're gone, and it affects your whole life. But if you met me, you wouldn't think there's anything wrong with me. You wouldn't realise there was something wrong with it.
And you mentioned there, you're back walking, your memory isn't great, but you said a phrase, I can't judge the future. What does that mean?
I don't know. It just means nothing to me, if you know what I mean. It doesn't mean anything to me.
If I say to you, you're going on holidays to Spain in September or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I'd love that, but I wouldn't. That'd be lovely, but I wouldn't. The time scale between now and September couldn't grasp that, you know.
Okay,
I don't know.
Okay.
You're doing
an extraordinarily good job, as is Emer, as are our other callers, because I think it's something that people are totally aware, but a lot of people would be unaware, and it seems every manifestation of this encephalitis is unique in its own way. Stay there, Jerry, and Emer, 51551joe@rt.ie.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Bernie, good afternoon. We're listening to Emer, who has a condition called Hashimoto encephalitis, which means her short-term memory is effectively non-existent, and she has to keep a daily diary to remember who she spoke to and what she said, and she's been keeping that now, I think, for 15 years. Bernie, your experience, please.
Well, my experience is from my son,
okay,
who is hydrocephalus. Okay, he's 17 now, but concept of time would be a huge issue. He could explain something to you that happened yesterday that could have been a year ago.
Okay,
all right. Retention of information is a huge issue. To be able to make it from A to B. Now, it has improved immensely in the last 2 years. Unfortunately, he had to go for 2 lots of major brain surgery,
okay. And
got a new thing called a VP shunt, programmable one. So that makes a difference in his life, a little bit of difference, depending on the volume of pressure of fluid coming from the brain. But, I mean, he would be judged, and I can understand how these people feel in their hearts, because I've seen it for him, and the love for a child explains everything, you know. He could do something totally irrational, okay?
Okay.
And, you know, people say, what the hell is going on here? I said, because they can't physically see disability. Now, at stages when he had the surgery, people could see, yeah, there's something wrong, and, mm-hmm. you know, okay, they didn't. But, I mean, a simple thing like his hands would take to shake and be holding a cup of tea. And we can't see anything wrong with him. People kind of felt, because he's always dropping things, or, you know.
Yeah.
So it is a very different life. You know, I think there's major improvements out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also the person lives themselves in a world that, like that man says, he doesn't know a future, you know.
Yeah.
My son certainly wouldn't know a future. If I said, right, we're going on holidays in September, I don't say that. Because every day till September, are we going today?
Yeah.
You know, so you manage, I suppose, to adjust your life to it, okay?
Mm.
But I think the whole sad part of reality is that, you know, unless you can physically see a disability in people, people can be judged. And I often wish sometimes maybe there's something in life that reminds us all, never judge people. Like, I mean, I've been in situations with this young boy, and, you know, I mean, it's been awful. Like, I mean, he wouldn't be able to get the concept of getting on the train and going, okay? Now he has done it about 500 times in the last 6 months, okay?
Yeah.
I have an app on his phone. He has an alarm set that he can get to the shopping centre, the alarm goes off, and he can make it back. But tomorrow could be he'd ring Mam and say, Mam, I don't know. And I have to go get him. But we have to give him the chance.
He wouldn't know his way home.
Wouldn't have a clue. Not a clue. Has gone to Newbridge, to go to Newbridge, and rang me to tell me he's in Dublin.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd just say, well, I'd stay where you are right now, okay? I'll come get you. But it's practice, practice, practice. And the more times something is practiced, the more it stays in the brain. You know, but like a concert now. And I mean, he loved to go to a concert, and I wouldn't even mention name, but a group of coach group brought him to a concert for us with a friend.
Yeah.
And they were extremely good. But like that, he'd be in and out of the concert every 10 to 15 minutes. He wouldn't get the concept. This is a concert to be enjoyed. And the noise level.
Yeah, yeah.
Variants of noise levels. I remember he was petrified of the fire engine. Mm. Right. Of the sound of it, even the guard car.
The sirens, yeah.
And thankfully, we live in a small little community, and he then grew to know the people in the fire engine, knew there was going to be a reaction, you know.
But you're saying, Bernie, part of it is because you cannot see the difference. Part of it is trying to get people to understand that if you notice something different about somebody, it doesn't mean, as in Emer gave some incredible examples, that the examples that Ian were giving, that people, when they misunderstood her, when she got startled, that some people might start laughing at her. What's wrong with her?
I can totally understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
A car going by, my son, he were out for a walk, right, would absolutely petrify him.
Yeah.
Right? And people give a beep saying, they'd say, I know you. And that made the situation 10 times worse. But people aren't in control of that part of it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't judge people for that. You know, because they don't know the individual, they don't know that it's sending on a different reaction.
Yeah.
So I tend not to dwell on that at all, okay?
Okay.
But the part that does kind of make you feel a bit sad is, you know, if they do act out, there should be more allowances made for these people. I mean, I've had my son in the supermarket who just went in a total frenzy altogether and sat down on the floor, and there was no movement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I will never forget it, and I met a beautiful lady, and she actually thought he was acting out because he didn't get his own way.
Yeah.
Right. So I sat down on the floor beside him. And
okay.
She said, well, I've been here before, and she sat down beside me. And, you know, it was a simple thing that lady did. She didn't judge me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she explained afterwards she thought the child was acting out just because he wasn't getting its own way.
But
it made such a difference. You know, it made the whole situation controllable and no big scenes or, you know, so you really don't, you can't call things. You know, and I suppose I've learned that lesson in life. And, you know, maybe before I had to deal with this situation, I've probably done the same thing too. And I'm sure, I know I did. I say, what the hell's going on there? You know, or can she not control the child or whatever else?
Now you prompted me to ask Bernie. Thanks, stay there, Bernie. Emer, the story of, again, Bernie saying people don't understand, the story of the young children throwing stones at a galvanised roof.
Yes.
Can you tell me what happened there?
I was sitting in an area outside the premises, and a bang of some description frightened me, and I must have jumped or let a scream.
Okay.
And a couple of minutes later, there was a bang again, and there was a group of teenagers opposite me. So I jumped again and I let a scream. I'm embarrassed every time that happens because my memory doesn't store how you deal with it. A couple of minutes later, another bang again of something.
So did they then realise they were getting this almost Pavlovian reaction from you when they threw the stones or wherever they made that noise?
I didn't know it was a stone, so I didn't know where the bang was coming from, only they were all laughing at me.
Okay.
Eventually, after four or five times, however, I don't know, found out that it was one of the young teenagers, throwing a stone up on the galvanized to startle my brain.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, again, I shouldn't have done this, but it upset me, and I didn't have a memory to know how to deal with the situation. Mm-hmm. I slapped the young lad in the jaw. So I'm not allowed to the premises again. And I find it very hurtful. Again, young students mainly, young kids, children, teenagers, whatever. Every time that incident of a fright or startle effect happens, they find it entertaining because they cannot see a brain injury.
Okay.
And somebody has suggested I go to schools to talk to students about how life can change for you. This happened at 21 at Rude.
You're talking about it now, and you are influencing and having an effect on a lot of people. Eimear, stay with us at 51551.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Ronahan is the name. Lorraine, it's your six-year-old daughter, Casey.
Yes. Casey's six, and Casey has been diagnosed with autoimmune encephalitis.
And how
We're only 8 months into the diagnosis now, and she's been doing well for the last few weeks. We're currently in the NRH rehabilitation to help her with her acquired brain injury that she has from the encephalitis. She suffers from seizures, so epilepsy is a secondary to the encephalitis, and she has seizures. Now today hasn't been a good day. We only came home last night, and she's had seizures all day today. Just tiredness, and probably the work that on the brain.
Yeah.
And stress as well, I think.
And Lorraine, does she know who you are?
She does now, but she didn't. She didn't know initially when it first happened. She knew nobody. She lost, she has long-term and short-term memory problems.
Yeah.
And she would have difficulty remembering people, and she forgot all who her family and all her school friends. She forgot. Yeah. Everything, basically. She didn't know anybody, and still now she would only know her immediate family, but even some of her cousins she wouldn't remember, some of her aunties and uncles. She would still, you would have to tell her every day, and she would ask every day, who is that, and where did they...
She's only a child, she's only six, as you say, she got it 8 months ago.
She's only turned six, yeah.
Does she remember, so she was five, and does she remember childhood things?
I don't know.
Favorite
don't
toy
know
or
yeah. She
Christmas.
Does have. She's only remembered Santa last week, so she only remembers. So we went through Christmas, and she didn't know anything about it. We only got home before Christmas from hospital, so that was completely. She was very sick then, and only last week she asked who Santa was, and she asked, could she write her list to Santa. She'll ask every day, is today Christmas? Or she'll ask every day, is Santa coming today? Or why does Santa come?
And this just came, the autoimmune encephalitis just came out of the blue, did it?
Out of the blue, yeah. She was sick for about a week with a fever on and off, and then it just started with seizures. She had seizures and she went into then continuous seizures and she was put straight into
And what's, Lorraine, is it too early to know prognosis?
Yeah, I think we're talking at the minute, you know, they're sort of telling us to, you know, a 3-year plan, you know, for her to see will she come back to us as parents. Well, we see a lot of improvements.
Okay.
Like, it's every day, it's one day at a time, and you, you don't plan for anything, you don't make, you know,
Oh, your life
because you don't know from one day to the next, is she going to be having a good day or a bad day, or, you know, so,
Hopefully, as you say, there you see improvements, but you're boredom and your focus in life is pivoted. I know you love your, I don't have other children, I know you loved her before this, but now the challenges are different, and that would completely knock everything off kilter. But anyway, I hope Lorraine, those little improvements continue. I'm out of time. Emer, we are on to your local council. We undertake, if you write this in your diary, we'll undertake to get an answer from them at least about your initial request. And I think people understand why you made it now, having listened to you speak so eloquently throughout the programme. So, Emer, mind yourself.
Joe, thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your time. And Bernie and Jerry and Derek and Roisin and Kevin and all the other callers. John, I think. Ruth Kennington, Boston Sound. Laura Lee Davis is the BCO. Richie Byrne is the researcher. Fergus Sweeney, producer. Hugh Ormond is the series producer. And Ray Darcy is next.